With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You know, to some extent, this is probably also a concern about overall springtime demand, especially in the context of higher inflation. But, you know, this is, seasonally speaking, our strongest part of the year. This is the heart of grilling season.
Mike Castle is senior commodities economist with StoneX. Tight cattle supplies, though, remain the strongest signal in USDA's latest livestock outlook. With beef production lowered for this year, expected to decline again in 2027. USDA now forecasting beef production this year at 25.5 billion pounds, down 243 million from their estimate last month. Cattle prices projected to be higher, with new highs expected in 2027. As supplies stay limited, beef imports forecast to be higher this year, while exports expected to soften due to lower production. Grain transportation costs remain elevated as ocean freight rates climb to their highest levels in nearly 4 years. USDA says the Gulf to Japan grain shipping rate reached $72 per metric ton for the week ending May 14th. That's the highest since July of 2022. Pacific Northwest to Japan rate rose to $37.25 per metric ton. That's the highest level since August of 2022. And since the first of the year, Gulf rates are up 44%. Pacific Northwest rates have climbed 41%. Strong dry bulk demand, including coal, iron ore, and grain, continues to support vessel rates. Higher oil prices, also keeping bunker fuel costs elevated. Rail grain movement softened for the week, but remained well above last year and the three-year average. And barge movement improved from the previous week, but stayed below last year's levels. Diesel eased slightly, now $5.59 per gallon, but still $2.06 above last year. Comes back to input prices, right? Well, farm finances weakened across the Minneapolis Federal Reserve District as higher input costs added pressure to already tight crop margins. Minneapolis Fed said more than 75% of ag lenders reported lower farm incomes in the first quarter compared with a year earlier. Loan demand moved higher as cash flow tightened, 46% of lenders reporting increased loan demand, while nearly half said renewals or extensions increased, almost half reporting lower loan repayment rates. Capital spending continues to pull back. 65% of lenders reported lower spending on equipment and buildings. It's showing producers remain cautious about major purchases heading into the growing season. And finally, China's new pledge to buy more U.S. ag products could support farm exports, but follow-through may be difficult. Retired USDA economist Dr. Fred Gehl says White House commitment calls for China to buy $17 billion per year in non-soybean U.S. farm products. Those earlier commitments call for China, though, to buy 25 million metric tons of beans annually from 26 through 28. Gehl says the challenge is that China's non-soybean ag purchases from the U.S. have fallen sharply since the Phase 1 years. Lower commodity prices, weak Chinese demand, stronger competition from Brazil could limit the value of future purchases. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
The beef industry is driving the state ag economy at the moment. In fact, if we look at farm income numbers in general that I look at regularly, 4 years ago, the livestock sector and the crop sector were largely on par with each other in terms of total receipts. This year, the livestock sector is more than twice the crop sector in terms of total receipts.
University of Nebraska at Lincoln, livestock economist Brad Lubin on how the cattle industry is driving the ag economy. But there's a dichotomy when it comes to trade.
It is the quintessential question about trade and what's the benefit of trade. And as a trade economist or as an economist studying trade policy issues, I would often characterize trade and the benefits of trade are fundamentally about consumers. Consumers benefit from having new products or more products available and price competitiveness and so forth. Trade politics tend to be about producers. And it's supporting or protecting production resources and investments from competition from elsewhere, whether it's fair or unfair. Well, in the trade arena, the cattle industry, the beef industry, kind of lives in both sectors. They benefit from consumer demand that drives exports, that drives domestic demand as well, certainly, but that drives exports. And that's exports for some of the higher value products that the U.S. produces, muscle cuts, steaks, and roast. They also benefit from foreign consumer demand for variety meats, the kinds of things that most American consumers don't touch. And so there's value in the carcass that otherwise wouldn't be there were it not for the benefits of exports and the export of beef and beef products globally. There's also import competition. And there is import competition in terms of live animals. Arguably, that's because the U.S. has a comparative advantage in feeding animals and processing animals compared to its neighbors and compared to much of the world. And so importing live animals from Canada, importing live animals from Mexico, when we don't have a New World screwworm outbreak to worry about, those are kinds of things that actually support the domestic industry as opposed to directly compete for prices for animals. Well, it does offer more supply of animals. So yes, a producer of animals thinks about imports as competition. A producer of beef thinks about trade as an opportunity. And so there's always a distinction between which side of the trade do you feel impacted by. The other reality, some of our imports are beef. Well, that's imports typically of beef trim, lean beef trim. That's what gets ground into our hamburger mix. The U.S. seems to be an outsized consumer of hamburger. We love it in almost every form. And with the animals we produce and the muscle cuts and higher value animals that we're sending or that we're processing, we have a shortage of beef trim to produce the mainstay hamburger blend. And so getting that from elsewhere adds value to the tallow and the remainder of the carcass here as well. So that's more of a complementary import. It's a complementary good, not a substitute, but it looks like imports. And so when we look at statistics, yes, it looks like we import more animals. We certainly do. We import more pounds of beef. We do. Traditionally, we export more dollar value of beef than we import. In the midst of trade conflict at the moment, that's hurting a bit, but fundamentally, those are reasons why we focus so much on trade and trade issues.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So in 1995, the Colorado Cattlemen's Association, which is the nation's oldest ag industry group, started a conservation organization. And at the time, that was a pretty progressive move.
Eric Glenn, CEO of the Colorado Cattlemen's Ag Land Trust.
They did it because producers in Colorado were facing the challenges, particularly with estate taxes, of how to pass these family farms and ranches on to the next generation. And CCA determined that there was a tool that existed in the tax code called a conservation easement that could be helpful. There were environmental groups that were focused on that tool at that time, but no ag groups that farm and ranch families could turn to. And so they decided to set up CCALT, becoming first of its kind in the country, land trust that focuses exclusively on working with farm and ranch families to ensure we keep those working farms and ranches working and in family hands as much as we possibly can. And so since CCA created CCALT in 95, six other state livestock associations have followed suit. And we now have sister organizations operating in seven total states across the West and Midwest. And collectively, we've worked with more than 2,000 families and conserved over 3.1 million acres of working productive agricultural land across the West and Midwest.
But why should we care?
Yeah, so let's take Colorado as an example. We over the last 10 years, have lost more agricultural land than any other state in the country. So if you're a producer in Colorado, it's getting harder and harder to operate. And easement can be a tool. The land trust can be a resource to help you continue to carry on that family legacy. I think for producers kind of across the country, why they should care about this topic and think about these things is again, it goes back to that analogy of a tool. It's a tool and we need more tools, if we're going to continue on the great legacy that we have in this country of having family farms and ranches as the main provider of our food source. And so, one of the great things that we've found is that when we work with a landowner on an easement, they're going to give us input that's going to help us make that easement better. They're going to give us input into how do we make policy and the legal components of these things work better. So we really apply this approach of listening to the customer, who is the landowner. They're the ones that really do the conservation. They're the ones that grow the food. And they're the ones that steward the resources that make these places special. We need to listen to them and design these tools in ways that work for them. And so the more landowners we can engage with that are giving us that input, the better we're going to make these tools. And I think that gives us the greatest opportunity to ensure we continue to carry forward this great legacy in this country of having family farms and ranches and rural communities really as the backbone and fabric of our great nation.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
We got the headline earlier in the week that an agreement might be near, then got some pushback on that.
Mike Castle is senior commodities economist with StoneX.
We have seen a report here that seems like it kind of acted as the catalyst for that, at least, you know, last few hours price action of, you know, an agreement basically being reached via, you know, Pakistan's mediation. And this is really just coming from one news source within Iran. This is ILNA, which, if you're not familiar, that's probably for a decent reason. It's the Iranian Labor News Agency, so I'm not sure how much stock we really need to put in this, especially when the bigger outlets are all kind of, I guess, casting doubt on an actual agreement being reached here. We saw this morning reports that basically Iran's new Ayatollah Khamenei, that's the original Khamenei's son, putting out an order saying, hey, we will not be sending our enriched uranium outside of the country, which obviously has been a huge sticking point, right? That's kind of the top line demand from the U.S. and Israeli side. So if that is the case, I think that's probably more reflective of the IRGC, and this positive news is probably more reflective of the civilian government. And what that shows is honestly just this big internal division within Iran, which is a part of why this has been such a back and forth thing, is one side wants to make concessions within Iran, the other does not. And who ultimately ends up in charge is really still a big question mark. But we got that headline that triggered this sell-off in crude that kind of sent us back down on the day. That let stocks rise. But as crude fell, you know, just looking at some intraday charts here, you know, I picked wheat, for example, pretty much followed exactly with the crude oil market this afternoon. Not a ton of fresh news there, but really, again, just kind of tracking crude down, which, again, is this longer term phenomenon we've seen over the last few months of managed money trying to kind of rotate between equities and commodities. So when we got that news, you know, that looked like, hey, peace may be within sight, all of a sudden crude sells off, the rest of the commodity sector sells off, and that money piles back into stocks.
But there's a fundamental side, at least for corn, as export sales soar.
I think you've got pressures kind of competing from both ends of it. You mentioned that export sales report this morning, and it was extremely impressive on the corn side of things. And the bottom line is demand for U.S. corn exports remains just red hot. I mean, obviously, we sit here in mid-May, and we saw a jump up to 83.7 million bushels reported this morning of weekly corn sales on the old crop side of things. That was 20 million above even the top end estimate. It's a 17-week high. So solid new crop sales as well, I should mention, a little above 11 million bushels. And we saw corn in the green here kind of in response to that this morning. Same with beans. Kind of a softer week. I mean, we did see a four-week high in old crop bean sales, still relatively small at that 12.9 million bushels. But I think the big thing there, the top destination for both old and new crop soybean sales on this morning's report was for unknown destinations, which obviously is going to fuel the rumors of some potential Chinese buying. Again, nothing confirmed at this point. Elsewhere in the soy complex, you did see very strong soy meal sales. That was at an eight-week high, close to that 500,000 met ton mark. So overall, pretty strong there. That's been a common situation we've been seeing playing out. The top destination on that side was Italy, which kind of ties into this, you know, recent story we've seen in the last couple of months of some Argentine meal getting rejected in Europe for GMO reasons, shifting more of that demand to us. So that's kept things really firm here on the front end.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
90% of the livestock sector is cattle in Nebraska. So we know it's the cattle industry. We know prices are up. We know it's because supplies are down. The cattle herd is low, which limits the availability of feeder cattle and cattle to be fed. And so it limits supplies. Consumer demand has held up amazingly well.
University of Nebraska at Lincoln livestock economist Brad Lubin.
And record prices have helped drive receipts and profitability higher all the way back through the supply chain. It doesn't mean there aren't challenges and issues ahead, but certainly some of the issues are maybe a little bit less onerous given the great returns at the moment.
But two issues remain in the industry, traceability and labeling.
So traceability and labeling shows up in an international trade discussion. It also shows up, of course, in cattle health and well-being and the focus on animal disease management. Right now, the example for New World Screwworm is to stop it at the border and try and establish protocols before any animal imports return. But for some animal diseases that are already endemic to the United States and the reality of what's the role of traceability in helping to manage those diseases to prevent or to mitigate and respond if an animal disease outbreak occurs. Well, traceability is not a new concept. Ideas of traceability have been around forever. We could go far enough back and traceability meant fundamentally ownership. And we could talk about Nebraska brand law, but that's another topic, another column maybe. But traceability in terms of managing animal identification, animal health, there was a national animal ID plan about 25 years ago. The idea that you would identify every animal, every premises, and every movement of every animal so that you could, in fact, trace every animal within 48 hours if there was a disease outbreak. That whole national plan never took off. For lots of reasons, economic concerns, privacy concerns, liability concerns, marketability and so forth. But yet we still need some mechanism and some animal disease management program in place. And so there's continuing focus on traceability. A management implication, not a policy implication, is that traceability is hard to wrap your head around as a regulatory driven, issue unless you can also figure out that traceability gives you management benefits, like managing by the head instead of by the herd, managing inputs, identifying preferred genetics and so forth. So the more that we can identify benefits within the herd or within the feedlot of traceability, the less maybe resistance or concern there would be to the role of traceability as an overall animal health and marketing opportunity. Those are the issues that show up in traceability. Of course, it also blends over into labeling. And if you take a focus on general ag policy discussions, there's quite a bit of focus on labeling for what we might call alternative proteins. Mm-hmm. Or if you're in the industry, you might prefer the term fake meat, but, mm-hmm. but fundamentally know what we're talking about. The idea of labeling it or establishing rules in terms of how it can be labeled and what it can be called and what it can't be called, it's all fundamentally about what it communicates to the consumer amid the reality that there are so many different labels and so many different definitions out there already for almost everything that labeling confusion is a real thing too. And educating the consumer or establishing some guidelines and boundaries on what labeling can and can't say is an important question.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Despite recent challenges, it is important not to lose sight of the remarkable success that transformed California almonds from a niche crop into the state's second largest agricultural commodity by value.
Dr. Matt Wolf is specialty crop analyst with Terrain.
USDA data showed that from 1990 to 2024, almond production expanded at a compound annual rate of roughly 4.3%, supported by the Central Valley's ideal climate for almond production. Growth was further supported by powerful demand tailwinds as global incomes rose and diets shifted towards convenient, healthy foods. Almonds fit neatly into modern consumption patterns and became increasingly embedded in value-added products such as butter, flour, oil, and dairy alternatives. That innovation has resulted in almonds appearing in nearly every aisle of the grocery store. As demand expanded, the industry also built a diversified buyer base. Export growth outpaced production growth, with shipments rising at an estimated 5.6% annually. Measured by the HHI index, almond demand is less concentrated than total agricultural exports, helping mitigate country-specific risk when geopolitics or weakness in a particular country interrupt trade flows. Production, by contrast, is highly concentrated and has become more so. California accounts for about 80% of global almond supply, far surpassing producers Australia, Spain, and Portugal. While foreign competition continues to grow, California remains the world's dominant supplier, allowing the industry to capture the benefits of scale, innovation, and expanding demand. Over time, success reinforced itself. Growers, handlers, and service providers built a dense and specialized ecosystem with about 7,600 almond farmers, nearly 100 handlers, nearly 3 million bee colonies during harvest, and numerous irrigation and farm machinery companies ready to support farmers. One economic study from the University of California's Agricultural Issues Center put the industry's direct and indirect contribution to employment at roughly 110,000 jobs. These economies of agglomeration have generated efficiencies, facilitated expertise, and enhanced productivity gains that remain a quiet but durable advantage over competitors, even while costs continue to rise. Now let's move on to our weaknesses. Like most growth models, these strengths came with trade-offs, many of which surfaced simultaneously in the early 2020s. Following an exceptionally strong decade, the industry encountered a convergence of challenges from pandemic-related shipping disruptions to inflation to water constraints to trade frictions. As one farmer told me, it was Murphy's Law in action. What could go wrong did go wrong. Export dependence proved an obvious vulnerability. During the pandemic, congestion at the Port of Oakland slowed outbound shipments, leading to inventory buildup and a sharp drop in prices. While the buyer base is geographically diversified, the episode revealed how exposed the industry remains to systemic global shocks, even if it's reasonably hedged against individual country shocks. Shortly after, pandemic-induced inflation showed that the high cost of farming in California could rise even further, exposing farmers to record high losses. The cost of inputs, labor, and regulatory compliance all increased. With prices depressed, break-evens moved higher, intensifying financial stress across the industry. Water policy introduced a structural constraint. The rollout of groundwater sustainability plans under the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act introduced a constraint that, along with low prices, resulted in acreage removals. Groundwater limits will remain a binding long-term challenge. Statewide estimates suggest that hundreds of thousands of acres, most of them in permanent crops, may be repurposed.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.